VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us for Crosstalk. In for Jim Schneider today, I am Dalton Windsor, and, well, the headlines are plentiful, and this is a critical term for our court system, and religious liberty and life hangs in the balance. Our guest today is not one that ever shies away from controversy, but has been, and remains front and center fighting for your religious rights. Matt Staver joins us again today on Crosstalk. He is founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt is a constitutional attorney with over 300 published legal opinions. He has authored 8 scholarly law review publications and 10 books. Matt has filed numerous briefs and argued in many federal and state courts, and he has also argued landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And I might add, he's a favorite among VCY listeners. We always look forward to having Matt on the show with us. And Matt, we welcome you back to Crosstalk. And last week Tuesday, you very busy presenting oral arguments in a very special case. And going to see if you could join us here today to talk a little bit about how that went.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you. And certainly it went very well. And I don't know if anyone had a chance to listen to it that's listening, but you can always go to lc.org, very front page, and you can listen to the actual oral argument there. It's about 90 minutes from start to finish, and I'm the one opening, and I'm also the one closing, but you'll also hear me in the middle as I continue my argument at the very beginning. But it went very well. Many, many people were praying. We thank you for praying for this argument. It went exceptionally well. We had to get tested, you know, to get into the courtroom and find out if you're able to go in. And so we got tested about, Anita and I, around 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, a week ago today, in fact. And then we didn't get the results until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so it took a long time. Mm-hmm. So just literally hours before the end of the workday on Monday, we found out that we were able to go inside the courtroom. An attorney that argued the case, a different case after our case, apparently tested positive and was not able to go into the courtroom and had to do that remotely. So all things worked out. God just opened up the doors. And then when I stood up to address the court, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, and then I began my opening argument, you know, God just took control from there because the justices had great questions. And by the time it's over, all of the justices were agreeing, apparently, with us and against Boston's position that wanted to censor Christian viewpoints. Even Justice Kagan, at the very end, to the Boston attorney, while he was arguing, said, look, flags go up, flags come down. It seems as though you just want to censor the religious viewpoint of one. That violates the free speech portion of our First Amendment. The end, she said, the end. It's over. And then even Justice Breyer, during my presentation, he asked why this case had not settled already before. And Justice Kagan picked up on that as well and said, yes, you know, the city made a mistake. Boston made a mistake. Asked the city attorney, why did you not settle this case? Why didn't you just admit your mistake, settle the case, go on, and move forward? So, you know, you don't want to have those kind of questions asked you or told to you if you're the city attorney during a Supreme Court oral argument. And that's, in fact, the kind of the way the oral argument went. And, of course, there were good comments from the rest of the justices. Justice Thomas was the first questioner. Bottom line is, even all the different kinds of media, whatever spectrum, even the Washington Post, when they reported on the oral arguments, they say that it looks like the Supreme Court disagrees with Boston that they should not have censored the Christian flag. And that's true. I mean, it's pretty obvious. You go back to 2017, Camp Constitution, they wanted to celebrate the Constitution for National Constitution Day. And they gave an application. 284 applications had been approved. No denials, virtually no review. But one word caught the attention of a Boston official, the word Christian on the application. The flag itself was not the problem. Had it been called anything but Christian on the application, the same flag would have flown for an hour without incident. And that is pretty unreal, that they didn't have a problem with the flag. And you could have called it Camp Constitution flag. You could have called it anything you wanted to. Just don't refer to it in the application form as Christian. And by doing so, that automatically disqualifies you from this open public forum that everyone else can participate in, but not anyone that has a specific religious viewpoint. That's the essence of this case. And the issue here is, can the government open up this forum for everyone to speak, and then when they get application number 285 with no denials up until then, but now they see on the application that you're a Christian, have a Christian viewpoint, slam the door in your face, and they raise the issue, well, it's the Establishment Clause and it's government speech and you're not welcome here. And that's the real danger of this case, and that's why the court took it. And I think we're going to have a big win.
What kind of timeline, or is there a timeline on this big win that you talk about? When might we know?
Well, we should know sometime, obviously, before the end of the term, which is going to be the end of June. It's not going to happen, you know, in the next few weeks, but I suspect we could get a decision as early as May, but likely more in June, and certainly not later than the last week of June, because that's the end of the court's term.
Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel here with us on Crosstalk today as we just look back to his very busy week last week with the U.S. Supreme Court, the case of Shurtleff versus the city of Boston. And Matt, truly, that was a historic day for not only you and all involved there, but for our country and religious liberty.
Yeah, it was really a historic day. You know, this is a day in which the United States actually filed a brief in our favor as well. And the Solicitor General of the United States gave 15-minute argument in defense of our position. So that's quite interesting. And I've had always a Solicitor General arguing either for me or against me on every Supreme Court case I've had. Fortunately, they've argued for me more than they have against me, and this was one where they argued for me. We also had 12 states that filed a brief in support of Liberty Counsel. We had 9 states plus the District of Columbia file a brief in opposition to Liberty Counsel. One of those states may well change its position now, Virginia, because the previous Democrat Attorney General signed on to an amicus brief against us supporting religious viewpoint censorship. But the new Attorney General, Republican, pro-life, Christian Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, may well ultimately reverse that. We don't know, but he just reversed the position of Virginia with regards to the Dobbs abortion case because, again, the previous Democrat Attorney General was on an amicus brief on the other side of that, and so there's been administration change. So it may come down to 8 states and the District of Columbia. The point is that you have 12 states for us, the United States for us, and 9 states plus the District of Columbia against us. That kind of shows you the interest from a national and from a state level, in addition to all the other groups that filed in our favor or even some of those that filed in opposition. You can expect some of those that filed in opposition, the Anti-Defamation League, the different strict separation of church and state groups that are very anti-religious, very anti-Christian particularly, and they didn't want any kind of Christian viewpoint expressed in a public forum. They were on the other side, but we had many on our side as well. So it was historic, and I think this particular decision will actually set a significant national precedent.
Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel, and again, excited to join the many and waiting to see exactly where the court will fall on this case. And have there been some other cases that you've been involved in the past, Matt, regarding, you know, something what many see as simply as flying a flag?
Not flying a flag, no. I mean, this is our first flag case because you don't really normally encounter that where you have a flag that become flagpole that becomes a public forum. But Boston created its flagpoles and its city plaza as an open public forum. They called it the public forum. They said public forums, and it included the flagpoles. And then their policy said that it was open to all applicants. So they had a public forum open to all applicants. It included the plaza out front of the city hall, and they have about four flagpoles. They have three out front, and they have another one on Congress Street that parallels the city hall. And usually on two of those flags, you have the United States flag and the Commonwealth flag that always flies, and a POW flag that flies under the United States flag. But one of the flagpoles is a flagpole that they take down their own flag and they raise up private flagpoles, flags. Those typically happen at the same time as a private event. So you have a private event that's at the base of the flagpoles, and the flag is raised temporarily during that private event. It's pretty obvious it's private speech. And they did that for 12 years up until 2017. So that created this public forum, and they did it intentionally, and they opened it up to everybody except now to people that have a Christian viewpoint. You're not welcome here. So the case is not just about flying a flag, because most people are not going to be flying, you know, a flag that has a religious viewpoint or a Christian flag on different flagpoles that are owned by the government. But what it does do is any public forum, whether it's a after-school program, for example, at a public school, they open up their facilities after school to the different kind of scouting groups or the soccer clubs or the baseball clubs or whatever it may be. And then you also have some secular clubs and some civic clubs. Now you have the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Club, the Good News Club, and you also have, say, some Bible club or something of that nature. And if we lose this case, what that would mean is it can be open for everyone. And when the school sees a Christian that wants to use this, or somebody who has a Christian viewpoint wants to have equal opportunity, they can slam the door. You have common community room. For example, we litigated against the city of West Allis a number of years ago because they have a community room. Libraries have community rooms that are open to the public, and you can have all kinds of events in there and private meetings and gatherings. But if we lose this case, it means that they could shut the doors to anybody who wants to talk about religion or from a religious viewpoint. That's how important this case is. It has a broad reach, and it's just far, far, far beyond a simple flag.
So, you know, there's the Christian flag, and is this kind of a parallel as well to some of the trouble that we've seen with county courthouses and nativity displays during the holidays? Is that kind of, is there anything, any correlation to those two things?
It can be, because in some of those situations, you have private displays that are available, that people can create private displays. And if that's the case, private display on public property, for example, then the government can ultimately restrict that and say, oh, it's government speech, it's an establishment religion, and you're not welcome here. So the implications are quite big, you know, quite large. For example, you have a band shell in a public park, and you want to be able to have some event there, and they have all kinds of platforms where they have secular music or secular speakers, but now they want to eliminate someone with a religious viewpoint. If we lose, that's what would be in jeopardy.
Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel, as we've been discussing just the busyness and the importance of just the past week that he's been discussing. There's plenty more ahead. We're up against the break here. Stay with us. You're listening to the VCY America Radio Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how far away is Mars?
Chris, both Mars and Earth are orbiting the sun at different distances. The Earth circles the sun every year, but Mars, being at a different distance and a different speed, has a different timetable. In their elliptical travels, Earth passes Mars every 780 days or so, and at that time is as close as it's going to be for another 2.5 years. In August of 2004, they came the closest ever, but still over 55 million kilometers of distance between them. Chris, the orbits of the planets and the moons are so precise that we can calculate exactly where they'll be at a point in the future. This was God's purpose for the heavenly bodies, to help men keep time. Chris, I think they have accomplished their back to Genesis purpose well, don't you?
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
back on Crosstalk here on the VCY America Radio Network. Matt Staver and Liberty Council joining us today. And Matt, we want to shift gears, if you will, now getting into this next segment and talking about, we talked about the busyness and the importance of last week and the arguments that you had there. Then some really positive things happening over the weekend, and Liberty Council was a part of this. We understand thousands of people were in Washington, D.C. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Yes, Liberty Council has a ministry center right behind the Supreme Court, and also one of our ministries is Faith and Liberty Ministry. And every year, Faith and Liberty participates in the annual March for Life. This year was the coldest ever on record. I think it got down to as low as 8 degrees, so it was really freezing.
Wow.
But there were tens and tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people that were actually there at the annual March for Life, and it walks right up to and culminates at the front of the Supreme Court. That happened on Friday, which was the annual March for Life. One of our attorneys, Senior Counsel for Governmental Affairs, Jonathan Alexander, was on the platform for the annual March for Life, speaking to the group before the march started. And then Peggy Niedenhaber, our Vice President of our ministry, Faith and Liberty, was also very actively involved. And she and Faith and Liberty were part of the annual Lane of the Roses down in front of the Supreme Court that happened on Saturday morning. And we put 3,000 roses in front of the Supreme Court, line them up at the bottom of the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court. And those roses, 3,000 of them, are symbolizing the 3,000 babies that are aborted every single day since the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. And so at any rate, there is a lot of activity that happened, and there was a lot of enthusiasm this year. There's always been a lot of enthusiasm, but there is a lot of enthusiasm this year because there's a lot of hope that the Supreme Court will overturn Roe versus Wade in this Dobbs case coming out of Mississippi.
That enthusiasm, that optimism is something that it's growing, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's very much growing. And every year, you know, when you go to the March for Life, there's hundreds of thousands of people that are there. The media always underreports it. And the media always, you know, underreports how many are there. And they never report about the demographics. The amazing thing is that the demographics is very young. It's not this older group. There are older people there.
Sure.
But by and large, the majority of people are young people. They're in their teens and 20s and early 30s, but many of them in their teens and 20s. Now, what does that tell you? What it tells you is that there is a continually growing youth movement that is pro-life. And that's like that. It's been like that for many years. What that shows you is that this is not an aging movement. It's a growing movement of young people that have grown up. These people have been born after 1973.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people who were born in the 1990s. And they were born long after abortion, the 1973 Supreme Court decision. And most of them were even born after the 1992 Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision by the Supreme Court. So they have lived from the moment of birth in an environment where abortion was permitted by the Supreme Court opinion, and they've rejected it. They are really, I think, the face of the pro-life movement. And the reason why the media never wants to write about it is because they know what that means. They know that they're losing ground. They're losing ground in the courts. They're losing ground in the state legislatures, and they're losing ground with the younger generation.
So you mentioned the Dobbs arguments. Is that going to be the catalyst, you think, that that may finally see Roe overturned?
I think it certainly is a possibility. I think there's no question that the Supreme Court is going to significantly cut back the abortion decisions. But I also think there's a possibility that they could, in fact, overturn the abortion decisions Now, what I think they would do is just overturn it and put it back where it was before 1973, and that is at the states, which means the battle won't stop. The battle will continue on the state level. And that's why New Jersey just passed this law or is moving in that direction. Other liberal states like that are moving to try it, and New York did it, to have abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. It is infanticide, what they're doing. But what we're seeing, what we will see, is that there are the overwhelming majority of states, if you allow them to pass these laws, they will pass laws that ban abortion or so severely restrict it that it won't be practical to operate abortion clinics in these different states. We're already seeing that. I mean, over the past, for example, 10 years, there's more abortion-restricting legislation, pro-life legislation, that's been passed by the states than at any time cumulative before that. Take all the years before that, and you see what's happening. There's this growing movement within the state legislatures, and that's how this case ultimately got to the Supreme Court. Mississippi knew that passing a law that banned abortion after 15 weeks would directly conflict with the United States Supreme Court. Well, why'd they do that? Well, for this very reason, to challenge it and bring Roe down. And there's other states that have similar laws, even more strict laws than 15 weeks. There are people that some states have heartbeat bills that would ban abortion essentially when the baby's heart is detected, which is going to be roughly around 6 weeks post, you know, fertilization. So I think you're seeing this growing movement. I've always said, and I deeply believe this, I think it's true, that I will see abortion overturned in my lifetime, and I think we're getting closer and closer to it. But that doesn't mean the battle's over. It means that we will have a significant reduction in abortions, but we'll have to battle it now on the state-by-state level.
Matt Staver, Liberty Counsel, here with us on Crosstalk, and again, just looking back over events from the past weekend, a 49th annual March for Life in Washington, D.C., and many pro-life and conservative people just making their voices being heard, making a stand here. And as Matt, as you mentioned, it does seem the momentum, the enthusiasm, the optimism is continuing to grow with each year as we would see these events. Even recently, I think back to Vice President Pence, President Trump, and just seeing, you know, the highest office in our land over these past few years behind us here, really making these statements. And so we're continuing to see us going the correct direction here.
Yeah, we're going in the right direction. Obviously, we should have stopped abortion. We should have never had it at the United States Supreme Court. And when the Supreme Court ultimately issued this outrageous opinion in 1973, January 22, 1973, the people should have revolted and said, look, you're not legislators, and this is not in the Constitution. They couldn't even find a place in the Constitution. They said, well, it's in the – we don't know exactly where the right is embedded. It's either in the First, could be, you know, emanating out of the Second, the Fourth, the Fifth, 14th Amendment, kind of like glowing around the edges of the Constitution, which they called the penumbra. I mean, that's not constitutional law. That's just judicial activism. And they clearly stepped outside of their judicial role. And as a result, 60-plus million babies have lost their lives, and not just brutally losing their lives, but also mothers have lost their dignity.
True.
And they've also gone through emotional and physical scarring. Some of them have lost their lives, too, and fathers and families. The devastation is incalculable, and the bloodshed is unbelievable. And this happened because of an out-of-control Supreme Court, but it also happened because the church was asleep. The church was asleep. The church should have risen up and said, enough.
Yes.
This is not going to happen on our watch, and this is not a constitutional ruling.
And speaking of the church, you know, with this March for Life and all of this really being built around that U.S. Supreme Court decision back in 1973, wasn't that in the month of January when that was handed down?
Yeah, it was January 22. It was argued in 1971, re-argued again, and then the decision was ultimately released on January 22, 1973. It was the same day for historical buffs that the newspapers reported the day before the newspapers reported that on that same day, Lyndon Baines Johnson died. So the headlines on the newspapers on January 22 was that the former president had died. Lyndon Baines Johnson died. And so what you see sometimes is what happened. You go back and look at those real historic newspapers. That was the headline. President, you know, Johnson is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And a sub-headline, maybe not even at the bottom of the first page, but maybe embedded in the newspaper, was what happened with the Supreme Court's 7-2 decision. And that somewhat slipped to the attention of a lot of people and didn't realize the magnitude of it. And in fact, I don't think most people could have imagined that it meant that abortion was legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. And I say legal, that the Supreme Court had condoned abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. That would not be in anybody's mind. No state in the Union offered abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. All states had some restrictions or banned it, except for, you know, life or some other rare situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was early 70s we talk about. It's long about 1984, I believe, on the day January 22nd of 1984. That's when President Reagan made a major proclamation deeming that Sunday Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And here we are somewhat almost 40 years later.
Yeah, that's right. And President Reagan was a strong pro-life president. And he declared Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. So from 1984 till now, you know, they always had the marches there in January, but then it became this national Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And, you know, this is an incredible moment of our history to be able to be here at this time. Obviously, for years, people have gone to the D.C. and braved the cold and the snow, some years difference than others. This was a very cold year, no snow, but very, very cold. But they were there. Some of our staff said they couldn't even feel their lips as they were talking. They were having such a hard time because of the cold. But they stood out there. Our ministry center was open for coffee and hot chocolate for those people who were marching. But it was an incredible opportunity. It's always an incredible opportunity if you ever get a chance to go. But this year was historic because of the enthusiasm and the optimism that people are feeling because of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to take the case in Dobbs and then the most recent oral argument that just occurred on December 1. So that's going to be a big case. You ask about when my case will be decided, Shurtleff versus City of Boston. I suspect that the Dobbs case may likely be one of the last cases of the term that they release, probably on the last day of the week of June, whenever they have their final day of session.
Well, for so many years, Matt, we're up against the break here, but for so many years, so many have been praying to see an end to this abortion, and you used a very strong word, even infanticide in our country, and you know, folks, we need to keep praying, no doubt about that. And it's great to hear that we're going the direction we are. Again, up against this break, we need to come back and we need to ask Matt about, where we are with all this news about these mandates for the jab. And there's plenty more to talk about there. Plus, we'll open the phone lines and hear from some of you when we continue with Matt Staver on Crosstalk. Stay with us.
One of the prevalent conflicts in society is the battle over gender and marriage. We are flooded with stories pertaining to drag queen story hours, the restroom debates, gender reassignment surgeries, pronoun identification, biological males on female athletic teams, and so much more. These issues are not only confronting schools and businesses, but they have also encroached inside the church. Many are left wondering how to deal with these matters. The book, The Marriage and Gender War, addresses these issues head-on by using the absolute standard for morality as found in God's Word and is edited by Bodie Hodge and Ken Ham. The book is designed to equip students, parents, Christian leaders, and others to uphold the truths of Scripture on these critical issues. The Gender and Marriage War is available for a donation of $16 by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. In for Jim Schneider, I am Dalton Windsor, and with us is Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel. And Matt, before we go ahead and look at some of these other cases, want to just maybe mention one more thing. You mentioned during the break about how many people were at the March for Life and how that continues to grow each and every year there in Washington and other events like that in respective cities across the country. This would be a good opportunity to encourage people to get engaged with these kind of events that go on around the calendar year.
Absolutely. In fact, there's not just in Washington, D.C. Some of these marches are also in other locations as well. And if they're not in your location, you could be a part of helping to start them and participate same day, for example, in the annual March for Life. So while Washington, D.C. is a place where people are gathering, and there's hundreds of thousands of people that come there, many do the same thing on the state capitol levels or in your other local state parks or some other venue for public gathering.
And then, of course, it should be on every church prayer list from coast to coast.
Absolutely.
And around the world.
Oh, it should be. And, you know, we ought to have some kind of discussion. If you go back to look at the pastors, they would call them the Black Robe Regiment because they wore black robes, many of the pastors in the early founding era, Protestants and Catholics. They wore black robes into the pulpit. And so they call them the Black Robe Regiment. But they would speak. You go back and look at their sermons, and they would speak about all the different relevant historical, political, and other events, even natural phenomena that were taking place, like eclipses and so forth. They would want to give information from the Bible about what is in the Bible with regards to that issue. And certainly if the Black Robe Regiment, the founders of the country, the pastors that, you know, thundered from the pulpits, that really kind of preached the Declaration of Independence before it was actually written down by Thomas Jefferson, if they were here today, you can guarantee that they would be talking about this issue from the pulpits, and certainly this weekend would have been one of those issues that would have resonated from the pulpits around America.
Maybe we should be in line for a modern-day type of Black Robe Regiment?
No, I think we should. I think we should. And, you know, people that attend different churches, if your pastor is silent on this issue, you know, talk to the pastor. Create a human life group in your church, and also maybe a group that kind of connects your church with what's going on in the reality around religious freedom and other kinds of things where they can get involved and have our Christian values affect every area of our community, our local, our state, and our national body politic, because it's so critically important that we have these Christian viewpoints. I mean, that's what we're fighting for in the case of Hal Shurtleff and Camp Constitution against the city of Boston, to be able to have equal opportunity to express Christian viewpoints.
Matt, obviously more we could talk about on all of that, but definitely good exhortation, if you will, for the people today to stay involved, to be engaged, and to be a voice for those who simply don't have a voice. And we're excited of the reports from the past weekend. But we do want to shift gears here, and we certainly can use your help and requesting your help, Matt, in understanding what all has taken place in our country just in the first few weeks of 2022, as we have been lambasted, if you will. And I say we, just the common folks, hearing about so much coming down from the court about these mandates and about the vaccines and how this is all working out. But the one theme that does seem to be coming out of all of this is that the Biden administration isn't getting things their way, at least in the courts.
No, they're not. In fact, they're getting a lot of setbacks. Let me begin with just the most recent setback. Late last week, a federal judge issued a nationwide injunction on behalf of all federal employees saying that Biden's mandate on federal employees was unconstitutional, beyond his authority, and it violated other constitutional rights of the federal employees. So issued a mandate that is, issued an injunction that is a nationwide injunction In fact, right now, if you go to one of the federal websites, it now says that this federal mandate is not currently being applied. Well, that's because the court has stopped it. So that's just recently. Then after that, you have the Supreme Court having two cases, and one was good and one was not good. One said that the mandate was blocked. That comes from OSHA on all employers that have 100 or more employees. That
yes.
is now blocked. Mm-hmm. It's still going through litigation. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, did not block the mandate with regards to healthcare workers or facilities that receive Medicaid and Medicare funds, by a 5-4 decision, upheld that. Now, that's not the final word. The litigation's still ongoing, but unfortunately, it's not blocked right now. However, some good news still, even though that case was 5-4 the wrong way, and it's still going on. The Supreme Court at the very beginning said that even under that mandate, medical and religious exemptions are still available. So even with that mandate for healthcare workers, for Medicaid, Medicare recipients, you still have medical exemptions and you still have religious exemption options. So we're still working with many, many people around the country to get religious exemptions, and people that need those exemptions or need information, they can go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, click on the Legal Help tab, or just go directly to lc.org/exempt/exempt. And so that's ongoing. And then on Thursday and Friday, Liberty Counsel filed some additional filings in our massive class action lawsuit on behalf of all the members of the military, all the federal employees, and all the federal civilian contractors. There's been a number of courts now that have blocked the mandates regarding the federal civilian contractors, so that's good news. And our class action lawsuit on behalf of the civilian contractors also seeks to have that apply to all civilian contractors and all members of the military. So we're back in court. We will expect a ruling from that judge in our case in the near future. I believe we're going to get an injunction because the court ultimately ordered the DOD, the Department of Defense, and the military to give reports every 2 weeks regarding the status of religious exemptions. And what we find is they have over 21,000 religious exemptions, and they are not granting any religious exemptions. So it's not good news for the military to have this in front of the judge. I think with that information, the judge will ultimately give us the injunction that we requested.
Matt, with this case and all that continues, we understand that things get held up and there's, you know, time that passes and, you know, things can just, we commonly understand it as being held up for a, you know, long, long time. How long can this type of thing continue to stall out? It really can't, because we need answers to these questions now.
Yeah, we need answers now. You know, for example, we went to court and filed in October of last year on behalf of the military members and the federal employees, civilian contractors. We had an argument in the court November 15, and the court did not grant the injunction toward the end of November, but ultimately ordered, for example, the military to give these reports beginning January 7. So that's fine, and I think we'll ultimately get the injunction. But here's the problem. In December, just before Christmas, one of our Marine clients that we have as one of our plaintiffs in the military case sent us a sad email that one of his platoon mates on December 23 took his life because he was facing these pressures that were put on him to get these shots. He had submitted his religious exemption request. But they're being denied, and as a result, they're not only denying them, but they're threatening to evict them from the military, to discharge them, and force them to pay back the cost of their educational benefits and the cost of their training, which can be millions and millions of dollars. So literally, they're wanting to make them dishonorable. these honorable men and women who have served and risked their lives. And they're wanting to abuse them and then bankrupt them so that they'll never be able to support their families in the future, leaving the job and the service that they love. They love God. They love the country. That's why they're there.
Yes.
And then also facing millions of dollars of debt because they're saying, like for a pilot, it can range between $5 million and $12 million of training costs. And they're saying that you're going to have to pay all that back. So this young man on December the 23rd took his own life. So the counselors were calling in all the platoon mates, including our client. And that's when he was informed that one of his platoon mates died. He says he was a nice person, easy to get along with, but the pressure was just too much for him, and he ended up ending his life. So I think we're going to get the injunction, but you're right. You know, for that young man, it's too late. For the healthcare workers in Maine that we're litigating, we've got a case before the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court should have blocked that mandate out of Maine. This is before they ultimately ruled on this Biden mandate. But they should have blocked it. And I think we'll ultimately win that case. There's no question about it. I think we will ultimately prevail long term. But in the meantime, you have healthcare workers that have lost their jobs.
Yes.
And these are people who are heroes. They go to the point of danger. They put their lives on the line. And they're being treated abusively, and it's just inhumane. So we can't wait much longer. And the more and more information that comes out about these COVID shots, the more clear it becomes that they're neither safe nor are they effective. People are dying who get the shots. I've had friends who've died who have gotten the shots. And the media keeps suppressing, and the CDC keeps suppressing other valid treatment that's available that works. And many, many people, unfortunately, are dying needlessly. Some of them are dying needlessly in the hospitals because they're not getting the proper treatment that they need. And it is the most unbelievable situation that we've ever faced as a nation where people die needlessly. I think a lot of this is being fueled by, you know, the pharmaceutical companies. But we can't continue down this road much longer.
No.
They want to continue down this road because they found a key by which they can terrify people and then take away your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the threats of the virus, and then they want to mandate things. For example, you know, like when we were in D.C., my wife and I got there on Sunday, a week ago yesterday. A week ago today is when the D.C. mayor imposed these mandates. And so when we would walk into our hotel room, at hotel from outside, there was a sign that went up on Monday that you can't enter unless you have a COVID vaccine proof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it didn't apply to us because we were already checked in the day before. But you couldn't go to a restaurant. You couldn't walk down the street and go to a restaurant unless you had proof of your COVID shots.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, you talk about these rights, and when rights are taken away, they're never given back, are they? It doesn't seem that way.
Now, once you lose them, it's hard to get them back, if ever.
1-800-733-9829. We're talking with Matt Staver, and this is a great chance for you to get on board with us. 1-800-733-9829, as we'll come back with your questions when Crosstalk continues.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. Recently, Mike Lindell was a guest on my radio show, and what did he announce? Well, his bank of many, many years told him he has 9 accounts, including a recovery network, and they want them all gone. Leave. Why? Well, they actually said it, and was on a recording, that they don't want the PR problem. They don't want a public relations problem. Wait a minute. Have we reached the point now where people that are conservatives, Christians, concerned about our country and nation, that are patriots, that this is now a potential PR problem? You know, my friends, this is smelling an awfully lot like the 1930s and 40s at a different time in a different place. Americans need to stand up and realize that we're now playing for all the marbles. This is a worldview war. Many people today hate our belief in God, country, and family. And it's time to stand up peacefully, but speak up.
You are listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. Always a pleasure, always a privilege to have Matt Staver join us. Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council, and we're wanting to hear from you across the country today. So much that we've covered here this hour with Matt that you may have a question about. 1-800-733-9829. As Matt, we'll take some calls if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We're going to go to Zach. He is in River Falls, Wisconsin, I believe. Zach, thanks for calling Crosstalk today.
Hi. So my question is, if the Supreme Court would overturn abortion and Biden being in the White House doesn't like how the Supreme Court rules and decides to ignore the Supreme Court's ruling, what kind of trouble could he get for that? I mean, because Democrats really don't, they only see things one way, and that's their way.
Right, right. I wouldn't doubt that he would do something like that. The fact is, all these states many of these states, the vast majority, would ignore him and just go ahead and do what they have already planned to do, and that is to crack down on abortion and these abortion clinics. So I think that's what would happen. The question is he going to bring out the National Guard to come up against these? I wouldn't doubt anything about what he might do, but I think he's going to be in a very difficult situation. You know, he did the same thing with some of these mandates. He encouraged employers, for example, go ahead and enforce it anyway, even though the court said you had to stop it. It's the most lawless administration I've ever seen. So I have no doubt that he would do something, but, you know, he would have a lot of pushback.
All right, Zach, thank you for the call.
Yep.
All right, Mike is in Phoenix, Arizona. Mike, you're on with Matt Staver.
Hi, Matt. I'd like to ask you if you're going to go for attorney fees on the flag case, and if not, then I'd like 30 seconds to respond.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, fine. I'm glad to hear it, because as Christians, we tend to be merciful and let the other side have their way, but...
No way on this one. I mean, Boston is going to have to end up, just like what happened when we litigated against Governor Newsom in California. We won that case at the Supreme Court 5-4, 6-3, and then got the first statewide permanent injunction, and California had to pay.
Right, and Justice Kagan, I think you said it was, kind of opened the door for you when you said that Boston should have settled this a while ago.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Justice Kagan and Breyer, both of them.
Okay, thank you. Glad to hear it.
All right.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mike, thank you. Phoenix, Arizona, thank you for listening. Dana is in Spokane, Washington. Dana, you're on Crosstalk.
Hello. Yes, Matt, I just have been waiting to talk to you. I have a question for you. I have a daughter and a son-in-law in St. Louis, and my son-in-law has a 10-year-old by a previous relationship. She's completely disabled. She cannot talk, speak, and the mother has custody of her, and they keep going to court, and the judges there in St. Louis will not allow my daughter or her husband to have my husband. My son-in-law has been able to have a couple of visitations in a public park, but they won't let him have any kind of visitation or anything unless they agree to get vaccinated. My daughter is trying to become pregnant, and she doesn't want the vaccine, but they keep telling them that this is not an infringement on their freedom. It's just in the best interest of the daughter that if they want to see this, if he wants to see his daughter, they have to agree to not only get the vaccinations, injections, but to continue to get all the boosters following up or else.
Have someone contact Liberty Council, or they can go to lc.org/exempt. There's a component that we might be able to help with, and that is on the vaccination type thing. But with regards to all the custody issues, that's not something that we typically get involved in. So you need to get a local attorney there, and I'm sure they probably have one there on some of those issues. But with regards to imposing this COVID shot, that's just a violation of their rights.
Right. That's the whole thing. They're not allowed to have custody or visitation unless they agree to the vaccinations. And
right.
They do have a lawyer,
yeah, okay.
But the lawyer just keeps telling them, you don't, you know, unless you get the vaccination, there's nothing that we can do for you.
No, that's just not right. So, yeah, have them, you can contact us on that component of it.
All right. Thank you, Dana. Kurt is in Las Vegas. Thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on with Matt Staver.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. You know, I'm just kind of annoyed. Like, is this isn't a typical litigation question, but I'm just extremely annoyed. Like, my church is now doing COVID testing in the parking lot, and it's like, where do we stand and say no? Because to me, like, if you have a, if you're saying yes to COVID testing, you're saying yes to the whole propaganda behind it, the whole political movement behind it, and I'm supposed to be in a conservative church, and it just irritates my soul, and, like, I'm leaving the church. I can't do it. So my only question to you is not a litigation question. Where do we say enough is enough? Where do we say no? We're not doing any of this.
You know, at some point in time, you have to say that, and I think sometimes you have to talk with your feet. You know, obviously contact the leaders of the church, but then if that church is not going to be where you're comfortable, and there's a lot of people that found different churches because of all these COVID restrictions, because some of them were just so timid. And even some right now, I mean, I've seen some where they and I hope it's not very many, but I've seen some where they put people that have the shots on one side of the aisle and people that don't have the shots on the other side of the aisle. I mean, it's unbelievably unbiblical.
So this isn't new. That's not a new thing to you. You're seeing this, Matt.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. And obviously, I wouldn't stay a second in a church like that.
Yeah. Kurt, Las Vegas, thank you for your call. We're almost out of time. We can get one more. Richard is in Washington State. Richard, thanks for calling Crosstalk.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Matt. And the question is, why have I never heard the Declaration of Independence used to oppose the murder of the unborn?
Well, we have used it, and I've heard it used, but you're right, it should be, because, you know, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life. You know, that is right there, that life comes from God, not from the government, and that government's duty is to protect these pre-existing unalienable rights. It means that the government can't take away or diminish these rights. But it's a very powerful argument.
All right, Richard, we're out of time. Thank you for that call. And Matt, thank you so much for joining us and helping us to better understand all that is before us. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver, thank you for your time today. Your website, want to share that with us, please?
Yeah, you can go to lc.org, lc.org for legal help. Click the legal help tab for the COVID vaccine, whatever you're facing. You can go to the legal help tab for that as well. And other information is right there on the website.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.